Good afternoon, everybody. We'd like to welcome you to the September 25th, 2024 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of this commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas having special historical, cultural, or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or non-profit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are used by the board to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks that are located within the Savannah Local Historic and Conservation Districts. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified with the ordinance, items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangement of structures are not within this board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Please turn off cell phones. Okay, signposting. Members of the board receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were any projects not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we will move forward onto the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Okay, could I have a motion, please, to approve the consent agenda?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Virginia Mobley, second.
Okay.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Nedryka, approve.
Okay, motion passes. Okay, adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt today's agenda?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to adopt today's agenda.
Virginia Mobley, second.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Nedryka, approve.
Motion passes. Excellent. Okay, next up for the is the approval of the meetings minutes of the previous meeting. Can I have a motion, please?
Virginia Mobley, I make a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting of August 28, 2024.
Katrina Horning, I second. Katrina Horning, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Nedryka, approve.
Motion passes. Next, we are going on to, are there any items that are going to be requested to be removed from the final agenda? Hearing none, we'll go to the continued agenda. These items have been continued, deferred to the next meeting or a date certain, or that staff has determined incomplete at this time. Can I have a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Kathy Levina, I move to approve the continued agenda.
Ann Miller, second.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Nedryka, approve.
Okay, do we have any requests for extension? No? Okay, so we'll move on to the regular agenda. Applications are submitted monthly and appear on the regular agenda in the following order by district. Victorian District, Kyler Brownville Districts, Streetcar District, and Conservation Districts. So we'll begin the regular agenda with staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. The board will then ask the petitioner to limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items as identified as inconsistent with the ordinance. and questions raised by board members. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go on to board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairperson. We will structure board discussion by calling on each board member for two rounds of two-minute comments or less. Board members are not required to comment. If you are joining us for the first time or virtually, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise your hand feature. I will be notified and I will call on you by name. You will submit your name for the record and then make comment. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. So first, there we go. Today's first petition is the petition of Shah Architects and Interiors, permit number 24-0047734, 116 East Henry Street, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the request for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for a two-story accessory dwelling unit at the rear of 116 East Henry Street. So just for a little project history, this is a redesign of a previously approved project for a two-story ADU, which this is the previously approved. And that was first heard on March 19th of 2020. It was approved with some conditions. It came back in November of 2022, where it was approved, which included a variance. In this case, the variance is not needed. There was a demolition of a non-contributing garage at the rear that has already taken place. But the present application is a new submittal because the design had changed significantly enough that staff determined this to be a new project that would require more than an amendment. The non-contributing garage, as noted, was previously demolished, so that's not part of this application. So staff did find in some regards that the standards were met, but with regard to the visual compatibility and openings, the north elevation, which faces the lane, is the most visible elevation. The proportion of the upper level and lower level windows is slightly off balance due to the smaller size of the lower level windows. They're aligned in the same bays, though, and staff requests information on whether the size of the lower level windows could be adjusted to be more proportionate to the ones on the upper level. And for roof shapes, a flat roof on a carriage house is visually compatible with surrounding buildings that also have flat roofs. The rear elevation of the principal building appears to be flat from the ground level perspective. What may not be as visually compatible is the proposed railing around the roof enclosing the deck and the stair tower, because this is not seen on contributing buildings in the area, particularly with accessory structures. And then with regard to the size of accessory dwelling units, ADUs are supposed to contain no more than one bedroom. But in this case, it was shown on the plans that there was an office, but it included a closet, which qualifies it as a bedroom. However, staff did discuss this with the applicant, and they noted the closet will be removed from the office. So in this case, staff will accept a revised drawing showing that change. For the architectural style, although it differs somewhat from the principal building, with the change from the gable roof in the previous design to the flat roof with the tower, staff finds since the proposed ADU is also a wood frame structure, like the principal dwelling, the flat roof could work if the tower were omitted. The rear of the principal dwelling, as mentioned, has a flat roof. And then the other thing noted was the height. So the total height of the building, which includes the tower, is 28 feet 3 inches, and the max is 25. So in removing the tower from the design, the ADU would then meet the height standard. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request to construct an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property located at 116 East Henry Street, with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for review and approval prior to starting the project, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. So one would be remove the tower element from the roof and closet from the office and submit to staff revised drawings for approval. And two, adjust the size of lower level windows on the north elevation to be more proportionate to the upper level windows. Thank you. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Do any board members have any questions for staff? Hearing none, is the petitioner available? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Johnson with Shaw Architecture, and I am the petitioner for this project. I can address the window issue first. We'd be happy to work with staff to adjust the windows. We do try to minimize the windows on the first floor of alleys for carriage houses as a security issue. These windows happen to be in a kitchen. But we are able to probably stretch the window head up a little bit in this case to enlarge the size. I think the size was the bulk of the issue with this one relative to the upper windows, which are the size they need to be for egress from a bedroom. So it's a little bit of a push and pull there, but we're happy to do that. This project was changed to include a roof deck at the owner's request to accompany this. We have reduced all of our head heights and our bearing heights to about the minimums we can. So we really brought the height of the building down. Although as was noted by staff, the stair access to the roof does exceed that 25 feet by a couple feet. We have done everything we can to limit that by one, locating that in the center of the mass of the building and limiting it to, it's about a 5x5 rectangle. So it would not be visible from the lane. It would marginally be visible from the street, but not a significant amount of it. And I would note that this property is immediately adjacent to, what becomes the TC1 neighborhood as it moves into the Sears building and the old gas station that was there, where the height limit in those areas is up to two stories taller. So it is a borderline property as it moves into the adjacent properties. So I would ask for the board to consider allowing for this small intrusion into the height limit, because it is centrally located and it is minimized to a footprint to make it accessible. Removal of the tower would essentially nullify the purpose of having a roof deck. So we would probably revert to our previous application, not build it at all. And I'm available if you have any questions.
So, Michael, to clarify, you can live with the conditions as the staff has recommended?
I can live with, I could work with the windows. We can't remove the tower. It's a roof deck. So if I remove the access, stair to get there, then, we'll just remove the whole roof. We'll eliminate the roof deck entirely. There's no point to building the roof deck.
Thank you.
Happy Lagana. Questions? So you will work with staff to comply with the 30% transparency issue on the first floor?
Yes.
Make the windows more compatible in proportion to the height. And then I don't know if you ever looked at, and this is just an alternative from removing the tower completely, but if there's a site called LAMILUX, and it offers roof hatches.
Yes.
Have you looked at those?
We
because
have.
That's a perfect solution for
they,
you.
They are, but they all involve a linear stair, and in this case, we have a spiral stair. Because of the footprint, and as you know, these are fairly limited footprints. So we really don't have room to add a full lineal stair that would allow for product like that. And the spiral stairs, those are not, they don't work as well with the spiral stair.
They don't work as well, but they do work, but maybe not as well. You might have to, but okay. And then the dimensions of the tower, according to the drawing, are 6'4" by 6'4". You said 5 foot.
I'm sorry. It might have been the inside dimension was 5 feet because that's our minimum stair size. And we're right up against it. So it might be 6 foot with a 6-inch wall on each side. I apologize for that.
And the tower is 9'1" in height?
The tower, maybe to the very peak of the roof, the slope roof.
It's because your drawings. I'm asking.
Yeah. The door height is at 6'8", and the bearing for the rafters is immediately above that.
Okay. Thank you. Kirsten Connor, is there a reason you chose 6/6 windows plus the 2/2?
Is there a reason we chose a 6/6? I believe the main house has, they were meant to match the main house originally.
But you have them shown as 2/2 and 6/6. Did I miss a note?
I might have. They should all be. The only reason we would make a change like that is if the window was smaller and to keep the pane size proportionate so you didn't end up with a tiny pane versus a large pane in the window size. Yes, and that is the case in those small bathroom windows. We went with the 2/2s there to keep the relative pane proportion the same.
What about the north elevation? Those are 6/6. Are those not the same size on the lower floor?
On the lower floor, those are the larger windows, so they are the 6/6.
On the north elevation?
On the north elevation. On the first floor?
Yeah.
Those should probably like equally be 2/2s, but I think those are the windows we are discussing changing to make more proportionate with the windows above it. I think I can increase those head heights.
Okay, thank you.
Kathy Ledvina, I'm just looking at the Luminex, and it says, and I'm quoting here, and you can pull it up, architectural freedom for planning roof access now also possible via spiral and platform staircase. So you actually have a great alternative to keep that deck and eliminate the tower.
So it might be a new product that might be available out there. We have not looked or used that product yet. Mm-hmm. I would imagine coming up a spiral stair, it's rather difficult to open a hatch above you.
It specifically says spiral. Maybe you can look at it.
Yeah, we could.
It would allow you the roof deck without that tower, and it would give you a solution.
Perhaps.
I'm just providing a solution.
Does anybody else have any comments, questions? Is there any members from the public that would like to make a comment?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC agrees with staff's recommendations and would like to add that in addition to the tower being removed, that the railing also be removed, as we feel that a roof deck in this situation is not compatible. And we would also appreciate the consistency of window sizes, types, and light patterns, because we noticed the same thing as well. And that's all I have.
Are there any other members of the public? Anybody online? Okay, at this point, we'll end the board discussion. Katrina.
Katrina Hornung. I agree with staff's recommendations and that the tower is not visually compatible. Thank you.
Kathy Ledvina, I agree that it's with staff recommendations, including the window patterns and the 30% proportion on the first floor on the north facade. The railing is quite heavy. I think if you stepped it back, put the, something a little bit more transparent on all four sides, I think it would be more visually compatible. But I definitely think that the tower is visually incompatible regardless of the size, because it does go over the height limit as well. And there's a solution.
Virginia Mobley, I agree with staff recommendation. I think that the pattern of the windows should be continuous throughout the structure and follow what is in the area.
Pam Miller,
glad that you're going to look at the window adjustments, but I think as far as the tower goes, I'll have to agree with staff recommendations. Thank you.
Caitlin, will you put the staff recommendations back up?
I would agree the tower and the railing and roof deck is visually incompatible with the surrounding area. So I would believe they should be removed, as well as keeping the windows consistent with the light patterns and size as possible. That was it. Thank you.
Jeff Netrica, no additional comments.
Okay.
Katrina Hornung, no further comment.
Kathy?
She's thinking. Happy to find that. I think I said everything. Thank you.
Virginia Mobley, no further comment.
Pam Miller, no further comment.
Kirsten Connor, I stand by what I had said earlier. No further comment.
Jeff Netrica, no further comment.
And I'm going to weigh in, and I agree with Ellie from Historic Preservation, or Historic Savannah, that I think that their opinion is pretty on point as well. I'd like to acknowledge that. Thank you. So at this point, if there's no further discussion, I would like to call for a motion. I need sheets. You can put that in the motion. Go ahead.
Oh, nobody has that paper with the microphone.
Official motion. Oh, we got one. There we go.
Kathy. Here. Microphone, please.
It's not working
well. Oh, that's why. Sorry. Kathy Ledvina, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of 116 East Henry Street, 24-004738-COA, new construction, small parts 1 and 2, with the following conditions. Remove the tower element from the roof and closet from the office and submit to staff revised designs or drawings for approval. And 2, adjust the size of the lower level windows to meet the 30% transparency requirement on the north elevation to be more proportionate to the upper level windows. Otherwise, petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards with slight revision with the same sash pattern. Yep, go ahead.
Can we add to remove the railing? You didn't put that in there?
Yes. Okay. I thought if we – okay. Yes, yes.
You want to redo? Can I start off in the beginning?
Yeah. I apologize. I'll get it together. Kathy Ledvina, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of 116 East Henry Street, 24-004738-COA, new construction, small parts 1 and 2, with the following conditions. 1, remove the tower element as well as the railing and the solid parapet from the roof and the closet from the office, and then submit to staff the revised drawings for approval. 2, adjust the size of the lower level windows to meet the 30% requirement on the north elevation to be more proportionate in scale and pattern to the upper level windows. Otherwise, the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Katrina Hornung, I second.
Katrina, you get to vote.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Netrica, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. So moving on, we are now going to look at the streetcar at Kyler Brownville, petition of Eco-Friendly Construction and Consulting, COA 24004698827 West 39th Street, Rehabilitation and Alterations.
So the applicant is requesting to rehabilitate a structure at 827 West 39th and to construct a front porch and a rear deck on the same property. According to our contributing building list, this building was constructed in 1925, though it doesn't appear on its current site until the 1966 Sanborn map. So staff does believe that it was relocated to the current site. We cannot locate any other information about the building, such as where it came from or any other historic photos beyond that one Sanborn map. Overall, staff does find the rehabilitation work to meet the standards. It is worth noting that the applicant stated via email that none of the siding is being repaired or removed. We do, of course, ask if it's determined that such work needs to be done, staff be notified prior to taking place. The applicant is also requesting to construct a front porch as well as a rear deck on the property. Currently, there are foundations in these locations suggesting that such elements did exist there previously. Again, staff was unable to find any form of historic photos or anything else showing the buildings, so it's unclear if the building did historically have that beyond what we see with the foundations. But staff does find these elements to meet the standards, however. So with that, staff recommends approval of the request to rehabilitate the structure at 827 West 39th Street and to construct a front and rear deck at the same property with the following condition, and that is repair or replacement is necessary to siding. Staff be notified. Are there any questions?
Kirsten Connor, I did notice there is like some kind of remnants of a porch roof. I'm not sure if you guys looked at that closer.
We did notice that, but we didn't go onto the property itself, but we did know that that was there, which again suggests that maybe a porch was there historically.
It just would be a different roof than what is proposed. That's why I was wondering.
Does anybody else have any comments at this point in time? Hearing none, could the petitioner step forward and state their name for the record?
Andre Gadsden, I'm with Eco-Friendly Construction and Design. I'm in agreement with the staff recommendation. So based off of that question you had with the porch, front porch you were concerned about, we tried to use the same footprint that was existing. Therefore, we couldn't find any evidence of how the roof was actually built before. So we came up with a design that may be comparable for what the area.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Gadsden?
Virginia Mobley, is this going to be a single occupancy structure or is it a duplex?
Single.
And excuse me, one other question. Looking at the pictures, I can't see. Is this going to be a width of a porch that is usable, or is it just going to be a porch?
It's based on the current footprint, so I'm assuming it'll be usable. It definitely will be usable.
Okay. I mean, there's a big difference between a 3-foot porch
right.
That you can open the front door on and a porch you can have a chair and put your legs down.
Right. I think it's definitely a usable porch. I can't see the dimensions, but, and I don't know them off the top of my head, but.
Thank you.
All right. Does anybody else have any questions?
Just a point of clarification, it's not going to be a tin roof as shown on the plan. It's going to be a shingle roof, correct?
That is correct. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Any members of the public that would like to make a comment? No. Good. Anybody online want to make a comment?
No, sir.
Okay, hearing none, we can enter board discussion.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Kathy Levina, I tend to agree with Kirsten with the roof shape. I believe even looking at the roof, the existing roof, that the porch roof was independent from the main roof. And I would, to be more compatible in keeping with the architectural character of the house, I believe that you do need that independent porch roof. Second, the columns proposed 4x4 should be increased to at least 6x6 with a base and a capital for that column, as simple as that can be. They shouldn't be naked columns. And the question I had was the eave overhang on that roof. Maybe I missed that in the drawings.
Virginia Mobley, no comment.
Ann Miller, no comment.
Kirsten Connor, I just caught that too, Kathy. The rafters sticking out as a part of the original design of this house, and it's boxed in on the drawings. I think those are a pretty important architectural piece of this house. I would like to discuss keeping that.
Jeff Notrika, no additional comments.
Okay.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Kathy Levina, I believe that the base and the capital is a requirement in the ordinance.
Virginia Mobley, no comment.
Pam Miller, no comment.
Kirsten Connor, can you confirm that, Kelly, about the capitals and the porch columns?
Let me check real quick.
While we're at it, can I have Mr. Gadsden come back up to the podium so we can ask him some questions? So apparently we weren't done with any. So you've heard that the board have raised some concerns, and what is the position of you and your client as far as adjusting some of the plans to?
Sorry, Kathy Levine, you can look at the existing roof and you can see that it wasn't integrated in the existing roof. I mean, that's a solid roof line.
Okay. Well, we can easily make that adjustment.
And then using a 6x6 rather than a 4x4 for the.
That's not an issue.
That's not like, an issue.
That should be normal. That's not a big issue. The roof line is, we can simply drop that. That's no problem.
Okay.
Kirsten Connor, what about the rafters?
As far as boxing in the eaves?
Yeah, you had it boxed in on the drawings.
And
from the back, it looks like it was originally sticking out like that.
Like one side has like a rake,
mm-hmm.
and looks like the front originally was boxed in. It has two different elevations as far as the design of the rafter ends,
mm-hmm.
from what I've seen actually on the project. So it's a variation of both. And I looked at, you know, you can look at in comparison to everything else in the neighborhood too. Everything else is basically boxed in. I don't see, there's no minimum of any rake design in that neighborhood. So that's why we actually put it in there.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
I'd like to hear the rest of the board's opinion on that.
Okay. Does anybody have any further opinion that they'd like to offer for us? Hearing none, are we ready to put forward a motion?
Kirsten Connor, one more comment. Okay. I just accidentally looked at this, and there is a structure two houses down that has the rake design. So but it's just on the side elevations. So maybe the applicant has said that the front elevation might have been boxed in.
But the rear wasn't, right?
But exactly.
Okay, okay. We could always keep a mixture for both as well. We can write that in, I guess.
It's up to the rest of the board.
Keep it consistent.
That's just my thought, you know. I'm open to whatever the board thinks.
So, folks. Trina, you want to put forward a...
I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Eco-Friendly Construction and Consulting 24-004698-COA 827 West 39th Street with staff's conditions as well as the condition of the independent roof at the front porch with 6x6 posts with base and capital as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Question before it's seconded. Do we need to have it go back to just staff for the porch roof? Because it's not in the staff recommendation. I don't know.
I don't think it needs to come back in front of us.
Just to the staff.
Yeah, just to staff.
Yeah. I don't think it's in here. That's why I was asking.
Just to staff for review, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Staff review, yeah.
Should I try that again? I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Eco-Friendly Construction and Consulting, application 24-004698-COA 827 West 39th Street, with staff condition one, as well as the condition that the front porch roof be independent with 6x6 posts with base and capital to be reviewed by staff as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Kirsten Connor, second.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Notrika, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Now we move on to the streetcar district. Number 10, petition of Homestead Architecture, 24004688, COA, 225 West 40th Street. New construction, small parts 1 and 2, variance non-contributing demolition.
All right, thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant is requesting approval to construct an accessory dwelling unit at 225 West 40th Street. The project also includes demolition of an existing non-contributing garage and a variance for the standard that reads 8.7.4 accessory dwelling units. D, building size, the building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be a maximum of 40% of the building footprint of the principal dwelling unit, not to exceed 700 square feet. To allow for square footage that exceeds 40% of the building footprint. The maximum square footage would be 544 square feet, but the applicant is requesting 675. So just to show the existing site plan with the garage that's there now, and then the proposed site plan. Here's just some context photos of the principal house on the property and the garage structure. So the principal building at 225 West 40th Street was built in 1900 and is a contributing resource within the Thomas Square Streetcar National Register Historic District and the local streetcar district. The garage is noted as non-contributing and does not appear on the 1916 Sanborn map. A wood-framed one-story garage is noted on the 1953 and 1966 maps, not the concrete block garage that is seen today. So for the standards of the variance criteria, staff found that the variance is consistent
with the development pattern of accessory structures in the streetcar district, that there's special conditions and or circumstances that don't result from the actions of the applicant. The square footage of the main house and the lot size are not a result of actions taken by the applicant. This could potentially be financial in nature if the ADU were a rental, but that is not typically reviewed by the HPC for literal interpretation of the provisions of the new regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties that have existing ADUs comparable in size to others in the same zoning district under the terms of the ordinance. And for minimum variance, staff found the variance, if granted, is the minimum necessary to make possible the reasonable use of land, buildings, and structures. The footprint of the building has been determined by keeping the lower level as a two-car garage, each with 9-foot garage door openings. A smaller footprint within the 40% would potentially have an issue with the accommodation of modern vehicles. Just quickly to go over the non-contributing evaluation, since, you know, that is required to look into that. Staff found that there were no sources to indicate the garage should be considered for contributing status. The one-story concrete block garage was not constructed with the house, as it does not appear on the 1916 Sanborn map, which is here. And then, as previously mentioned, with the 1953 and 1966 updates, they show a narrower wood frame garage that appears to be different than what's there today. The building does not meet any of the criteria to become contributing, and staff recommends that it remains listed as non-contributing, but does recommend that the city's policy of documenting buildings over 40 years old is followed. With regard to the design, staff found overall the standards were met. They did have a question about materials, with porch elements being, if they're wood, they must be painted or stained, but in the initial submittal, it wasn't clear whether it would be one or the other, but discussions with the applicant after the report was written indicated that they will be painted to match that of the existing house. And then for accessory dwelling units location, the proposed ADU is detached. So in that case, it needs to follow the setback standards that are the same as, I should get the site plan back up for that, sorry. Essentially, it needs to meet the same side yard setback requirement, but for the standard to be met, the ADU would need to be in line with that of the house. The structure would be separated for more than 10 feet though, so aside from that, the standard is met, and staff did discuss this with the applicant, who sounded that they may be amenable to making that adjustment if needed. So with that, staff recommends that to approve the request to construct an accessory dwelling unit at 225 West 40th Street, including the demolition of a non-contributing garage, with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for review and approval prior to starting the project, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, clarify whether wood elements of the stairs, balusters, and railings will be painted or stained. To ensure that the ADU is within the same side yard setback as the principal structure as required in the ordinance. And three, document the non-contributing garage per the city's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition, and recommend approval of a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a variance from the standard with Section 8.7 accessory structures and uses as follows. The building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be a maximum of 40% of the building footprint of the principal dwelling, not to exceed 700 square feet, in order to allow for an ADU percentage that exceeds 40% of the footprint of the principal dwelling, because the variance criteria are met. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for staff regarding this application?
Capulet Bina, question to staff. Why is the variance consistent with the development pattern of accessory structures in the streetcar historic district?
When observing it's kind of unconventional on this route.
Let me just pull up the street view. Because if you notice along Jefferson Street, it's a little unconventional because we're not seeing a lot of lanes. Access here, everything's kind of like a side yard access for all these accessory structures. So in our assessment, it just felt like this was consistent with what we see throughout this area on the stretch of Jefferson between like 40th and within the next few blocks.
I guess I should say regarding going over the 40%.
Well,
the sizes of the accessory dwelling units in that area, how do they differ than the 40%, which is what was determined when the study was completed in order to write the ordinance?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with sometimes it almost seems like it contradicts itself a little bit because it may not be 40%, but it's still well under the 700 square feet. So that was a factor that went into the evaluation. If the commission feels differently, you're welcome to express that in your decision too.
So in this case, you're applying the 700 square feet versus the 40%.
The way the ordinance is written, there technically needs to be both. However, it just seems that if it meets at least one of them, this is still within an acceptable range that could be varied slightly for this purpose. Additionally, just because of the garage size necessary for the variant, I'm sorry, for the lower level two-car garage, just the sizes of what's feasible for current vehicles, that also kind of, you know, if it was that 544 square feet, they really wouldn't be able to accomplish what they're trying to do.
Do you know what percentage it is over 40%? Is it what percentage?
It's 49%.
49%.
Ooh, thank you.
Virginia Mobley, I don't know if this is a question for you.
Microphone.
It's on.
Oh.
I don't know whether this is a question for you or for the petitioner, but the two-car garage that's there now, is it usable?
That would be a question for the petitioner.
And what is the square footage of it, of that existing building?
I think it's on, let's see.
It's 380.
Yeah, 380 square feet. Anybody
else have any questions for staff? Pardon? Does anybody else have any questions for staff? If not, can we have the petitioner step forward? State your name for the record, please.
P.K. Huss, Homestead Architecture. First of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. Appreciate you being here. A couple things that were mentioned. One, yeah, the existing garage is not big enough for a car, any car lengthwise, certainly not two cars widthwise as well. The size of the accessory dwelling unit is primarily just based on the ability to have two modern cars to be able to pull it and park. I mean, that was the only thing. The house itself could be larger. If you were to build an addition on that house, let's say 12 by 12, then the 40% rule would still, you know, it would be within the 40%. So we're not that far off. The house is smaller than it would absolutely need to be. In fact, with the larger house and our proposed ADU, we would be well under the 45% that's allowed in that zoning district percentage of lot coverage. And As far as, yes, the porch will be painted. I don't, can't remember the other questions you had as far as that, but, you know, we'll comply with whatever we need to comply with. If there's something that's not on the drawings, we'll make it, we'll clarify that. But, the reason why we put the accessory dwelling unit up on the street, number one, is because that's where it is now. It also relates to the building, the ADU right next to it, which seems to have more of a relationship along that Jefferson Street than it does with the house. The house itself is one of the only buildings, with the exception of the one directly across the street, that's not on the property line. If you were to build a building there today, and we've done this in the past where we're required to put the house in alignment with the other houses that create the prevailing setback. So if you were to drive up and down Jefferson Street, you would see this house and the one directly across the street are the only two houses that are not on the property line. So we were trying to maintain a level of line of continuity with that. You know, we would argue that point all the way up to the point where I'm ready to follow my sword. We want approval, and if that's the only thing that's holding us back, of course, we feel like if you did push it back, you'd expose a very unattractive corner of the existing ADU right next to it. We feel like the setback is actually the property line, despite the fact that the house is not located on the property line. So, like I said, if you were to build a new house, it would probably be on that property line to maintain that line of continuity. So that's where we left it. Again, we're not going to fall on our sword for it, but we feel like that's the most appropriate, location. That's where it's historically been. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Board members, do you have any questions for the petitioner?
This is Pam Miller. I just have a question. So a 24x24 foot garage would be 576 feet, right? So that's more in line with the 40%. So is that not big enough for two modern cars?
Well, the general standard is for cars, modern day cars, is for each car 12x24 feet. I mean, that would exterior dimensions. I mean, that would be enough so you could pull the car in, you could open the doors, you could walk around it. So that's a standard that we use. So this is, you know, if you use twice that, and I can't remember, that's almost 300, but there's also a little porch. And, so, I mean, it's really based on making it functional. So you could pull a modern sized car in there and open the doors and walk around it. So this is not, we're not asking for anything huge.
And you're saying that is 24x24.
No, I'm saying, 12x24. I'm saying that's the standard we usually use. This also, you know, there's an apartment above it. And so, I don't really have all the calculations in front of me, but we did not try to make it any bigger than we absolutely needed to make it big, make it as far as the function of the, really it was based on the function of the garage.
So then the size is the function of the garage or the porch above it?
The size has mostly to do with the cars.
Okay. Thank you.
Kathy Lidvina, what's the height of your building?
I'll get to you.
I don't have it written here. Although it's well under the maximum height restriction, which I think, I'm not sure exactly what that is, but.
What is the height in comparison to the main house?
Much lower.
No.
Well played.
Hey, well, I mean, if the one of the requirements is it has to be lower than the main house, it's definitely lower than the main house.
Well, it's a accessory unit.
These are,
a dwelling unit versus a main house. That's the, point of the question.
Yeah, this is looks like it's a 9-foot ceiling in the garage and an 8-foot ceiling on the second floor. So, if you need to know the peak of the roof or the mean elevation of the roof, I would say, it would be much less than 30 feet.
Thank you.
Do you know what I'm not sure what the maximum is there, but it's much lower. This is much lower than the maximum.
Any more questions? Not hearing none. Pull back at you if we need you. Any members of the public like to make a comment? Do you have anybody online?
No, sir.
Okay, at this point, we'll enter board discussion. Unless called upon, we won't be taking any further discussion from the public or the petitioner. Katrina?
As far as the setback in the context of this building, I could go either way on depending on what the board feels. And as far as the size of the garage and creating additional space in the apartment, I don't have any issue going above that 40% lot size.
Kathy?
Kathy Ledvina. I do have a couple of concerns. Obviously, I'm concerned about the maximum of 40%. Because I was curious as well, when I did my research, it said the standard garage, modern garage, two-car garage is between 18 and 24 feet deep, which can fit almost any vehicle. As previously stated by Pam, 24 feet deep would accommodate the vehicles, plus if you add a six-foot block wall or what have you, 6 and 6, 12. So you've got 25 feet deep, I think, and then you could certainly not exceed the 40% standard. The 40% standard is only the footprint. It does not include the stair. It does not include the oriel window. So he has made excellent use of space. I am an ordinance person. The ordinance was there for a reason. I did not come up with it, but there's a reason that it says 40%, and I am a 40% girl here. Also, my concern is the height. I do not see a rendering that compares the main house to the proposed ADU, and I do not know if the ADU is subordinate to the main house. The height is a concern. And again, I don't see a complete submission without that perspective.
Virginia, yes.
Virginia Motley, can we see the picture of the street face where this is? I want to go back to.
Can we go pull the Google map?
You want to go
map,
back
please?
To the street view?
Yeah.
See, would that be? Would the property behind it, the yellow house, is that on 39th Street?
Mm-hmm. This is the main house on 40th.
That's the main house.
No.
So, okay.
That's not the subject property, right? On the other side of the street.
With this, the one right next to it, it's just a few feet from it where the garage, we want to keep it in mind with that building on Jefferson.
We need you to talk from the microphone so you can be recorded. We need you to come up. Thank you.
State your name for the record,
sir. The yellow house.
Sir, can you state your name for the record, please?
Vic Jarvis.
Okay. So this house we're looking at here is not the house, the subject house, correct?
It's been renovated.
Okay.
And this is the same house, but it's in the pictures. The other pictures, it's gray, and this is an old Google view, so it's an older picture, but it's the same house.
Okay, so this is the garage we're looking at.
Right, the garage is not usable. The wall is, like, starting to come in, so that's why we wanted to take it out and rebuild. Okay. And we're trying to keep it in line with Jefferson Street. All the other houses are built up on the street, especially the property right next to it on Jefferson, which is, like, very close proximity. The house is a lot further away. So we're trying to keep it in existing with what is already on the street.
Okay. In comparison to the structure, looking at the monitor to the right of the garages, how tall is your structure going to be?
It would be similar to that property because that's a three-bedroom, three one-units, but it's a two-story, and ours is going to be a garage with one story above it.
I just want to know in feet, comparison, how tall will your structure be compared to the height of the structure next to it?
I would say less by about 5 feet.
State your name, please, sir.
I would say it would be much less, probably about 5 feet at the eaves. The ceiling height on that building is much higher than the ceiling height we're proposing. I don't know exactly what the ordinance is, but the last time I read it, the ordinance said the ADU had to be less than the height of the existing house, which it is. I'm sorry, I don't have a drawing of that, but comparing the two in this case, I would say that peak is probably going to be about 25 feet high, but that's all I can tell you right now.
Thank you.
This is Pam Miller. I think several things. Number one, again, I agree with my colleagues here that without having actually seeing the height relationship in a drawing versus just we think it's around 5 feet. I'd like to see if perhaps you could come back with that drawing updated. Also, just a comment that the setback could be achieved if the footprint was closer to the 40%. Even with the 24 by 24, you're still exceeding that 40% by about 100 feet. So that certainly gives you some provisions beyond the 40% even at that. So that is my comment. Thank you so much.
Kirsten Connor. I'm asking MPC, can you in the future make sure to have the Sanborn maps in the packet?
Yes.
I was looking at the, I think this is the one I'm looking at, 40th and Jefferson, correct?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Is that the one on the left? I'm sorry.
Is this one?
Okay. Thank you. I can go either way with the ADU structure being on the edge of the property line versus back. So I would just agree with staff recommendations. But I would also like to propose that we require an elevation to see the heights of not only the main structure, but also the neighboring structure. If we could make that a requirement, that'd be great.
Not for you, no additional comments.
We'll take a straw poll at this point before we move forward with further discussion. Based on the consensus of where the board is, I think one of the biggest sticking points we're seeing here is the elevation and how the relationship of the main structure and the subordinate structure. And we can't really make an effective decision without that information because we're dealing with conjecture and that isn't really effective. We've seen this happen before. So I would suggest that we look at that as something that needs to come back going forward, but that's you as a board. So if you want to make that proposal or if you want to continue the discussion.
Kirsten Connor, I think we should continue the discussion until we have a decision. Okay. That way the applicant knows what we deem as the standard for this.
Yep. I was just going to weigh in and quickly say, given there seem to be a lot of questions here and some information we need, so continuing it would seem prudent.
Okay. So is there the specifics that we want to have brought before us for a representation?
I mean, some board members here have a problem with the setback.
Well, if you want to address that today, but then talk about, have a consensus on that before we talk about elevation.
It's up to you guys. I'm just thinking about the applicant, whether or not they would prefer to have a direction for that or they have to come back again.
So in that case, then let's look at making a motion to talk about the setback, but also have it brought back in front of us regarding elevation and actual its context in relationship to the other building.
Kathy Levina, the concern I have is not really the setback, it's the 40%.
Okay.
The maximum of 40% and upholding the ordinance versus going 10% over, which is 20% over the ordinance for the footprint.
Kirsten Connor, so should we ask that the applicant come back with something that is revised to meet that standard, plus showing the height of the building?
Because right now with 9% above, it's 40%. This is now 9% above what the standard is. So it is significant.
9% over.
18% actually, I'm going to say. It's going to be pedantic. It's 80% above. Yes. Okay, so let's make a proposal. As far as the petition, could you step forward, please, sir? As you can see, we're in a bit of a quandary because there are a number of elements that are outstanding that we can't make a true judgment on and allow you to move forward with the project.
Understood.
So from what you're hearing, is that something that you can work with as far as we have a discussion as far as the subordination to the main building, and then we also look at possibly a reduction in footprint because you're at 48%, 49% of the floor plan. Is there some ways we can look at that and work with staff to come back and represent with that information so we can make it a little bit more of a...
Well, I certainly can come before staff with anything that's required if there's a staff approval that we can get.
You still have to represent in front of us context, because we've got essentially an application that doesn't give us all the information to make it approval.
Well, first of all, as far as the area square footage, I'm a little confused because there's a lot of historic precedence here in this board for approving carriage houses and accessory dwelling units that are slightly above the 40%, which is based on the square footage of the house, which is smaller than it needs to be. So I'm being penalized by the size of the house. In my mind, there's a reasonable difficulty in complying to the letter of the law and achieve the goals that the client wants to achieve. So, for instance, my car is 17 feet long, an 18-foot garage, I wouldn't be able to get out and walk around it. So most cars, 17 feet, 18 feet, some of the larger vehicles. So I still think that 24 by 24 is the correct size. We could reduce it some if we have to, if that's just not going to be something that is going to be amenable. Still, again, the garage, every garage on Jefferson Street, the garage doors are on the property line. So if we're going by precedence, then you have to say that garage, this garage to be consistent with every other garage in the block would be on the property.
Yeah, the other part of that is that anything that is pre-existing before the new zoning was put into place, technically that doesn't apply.
True. But there is something.
I completely understand where you're coming from. So and I don't have a voting place on this unless there's a tie.
The elevations, I could produce that today and give it to staff. I know that it's lower than it needs to be. I mean, I know I can't, this is not talkitecture and I apologize for not having the drawing, but I mean, we're way under the maximum height. And I mean, I know that I could provide that drawing within an hour of leaving here. I could give that to staff and I can prove my point if that was the only sticking point.
And this is what the board's asking for, is so they have that ability to make that determination. So
I just need to know what we're looking for to
present if we're going to continue it and review it again next month. And this is what I need you all to do as far as putting a motion together to do that as far as continuing it and what we need to look at.
So we want to see the height to the peak
and
the
elevation,
roof.
Yeah.
And then, would you be amenable to anything over 40%, I suppose, is a question.
Well, we need to talk about the 24. It's 25 wide, 27 is proposed. Dropping the 27 to 24.
So, Katrina Horning, so would you be amenable to changing the floor plan to a 24 by 24 depth?
If I'm absolutely happy, yes.
Kirsten Connor, I think in that case, this is my opinion on the situation. If he can work with staff, get it to that point, and also I trust staff to make a decision on the height of a accessory building. So I would be okay with him just going back to staff. But if he's not able to meet that 24, then it would have to come back to the board.
There was one other thing. Tomorrow we have the ZBA meeting and I was hoping to walk away with approval, but obviously we can't. So I'll continue that. But on the next one, part of my request, as it turned out, which wasn't necessarily articulated in the application, but I do need a recommendation for approval for that variance, even if it's because the 40% is also the zoning ordinance, which I need to get approval for from the ZBA. So when we do figure out what the square footage is going to be, I mean, that's what I'm going to have to ask from them. So in addition to getting all this stuff taken care of and getting staff approval, I need some kind of approval from the commission as a recommendation to the ZBA at some point saying that it's okay or you recommend approval for the whatever percent I'm allowed if it's over 40%. So I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to work with that.
Okay. So in that context, then it's basically we come back next month, we review what we talk about today, and then you'll be able to go for the ZBA after that is in place.
This is Pamela. I just want to just clarify a little bit. So it sounds to me like it's going to exceed, we're going to look for a variance approval regardless, because just a garage that's going to meet any kind of standard for a modern car is going to automatically exceed the variance by some level. Whether it's a little or a lot, it's going to still exceed it somewhat, because 40% is not 24 by 24. Right. So I think you need at least probably that size with modern cars. So, right. If we were to do that and it's just a little bit less, it still would exceed the variance. So, I mean, I don't have a problem saying it most likely is going to exceed the variance for that. As far as the setback goes, could go either way. But then also some of the conditions can be removed by next month as well, because you already addressed the paint versus the wood stain, that sort of thing. So.
Kirsten Connor, I would personally, again, I would be okay with approving or recommending approval of that variance, because either way, he's going to need a variance.
But it would still need to 24 by 25 is 600, therefore eliminating the variance.
He would still need the 40% variance.
Didn't we determine that 40%?
Just to provide some clarity, and I'm sure you all know this, you all cannot approve any variances.
Right.
You are, all you're doing is making a recommendation to the zoning board. They do not have to agree with you, or they can agree with you. All you're doing is making a recommendation. So you don't need the approval of, no. I just want to make the applicant clear that you don't need their approval for the variance because they don't grant variances. They make a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals.
They still have to come back here to get approval for the size. Even if we get a variance for a larger size,
that's correct.
They have to come back here with a smaller size to get approval here before I can start.
Well, right. You have to get a COA from the folks here, but they're somewhat separate in terms of who has authority over what. Just want to make sure that's clear.
And that's up to you, what you feel comfortable with. You can go,
There's also no requirement as to which board or commission you go to first. So if you wanted to go to the Zoning Board of Appeals first, you can do that. That's really up to you.
Well, I was told that I had to come here first.
There's no legal requirement.
Okay. See, I have that submitted.
We often recommend people to do that, but there's no, as in my understanding, there's no requirement of that. But I, just speaking on behalf of staff, it sounds like what you are looking for is basically a drawing that shows what we're seeing right now on the screen. The existing building, the primary building that we're talking about. This is the ADU that you mentioned that is with a different property. And then your new building in context. So they can see whether it is visually compatible. And I think our staff position would be to continue this. You can still go to the Zoning Board of Appeals. You said it's tomorrow? Tomorrow. This doesn't.
You have an application in already to the Zoning
Board
of Appeals?
Yeah, I submitted that first, and they were the ones who said that I had to come here
to come
first. That's why we're one day apart. I was able to get the submittal in just in time to get to this point. So
you're on the agenda for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can be heard by the Zoning Board of Appeals, and you can just note that you appeared before the Historic Preservation Commission. No action was taken on the recommendation.
Well, then
I mean, that's up to you.
Because what they need is the recommendation. So if I don't get a recommendation that I need, I'll just continue that too.
That would be your.
That's your call because they don't necessarily have to have a recommendation.
Right.
No.
They don't.
This is totally different than what they told me. So
okay.
I'm just at the mercy of
Kirsten. Jonathan, I think when Leah was here, they had made arrangements because there was no particular process and people were just kind of doing whoever they wanted first. I think, Caitlin, correct me if I'm wrong, we had a discussion and Leah coordinated where it would go to us first. And then
the zoning board prefers a recommendation from this board because what they don't want to do is approve a variance and then they come back here and it's not visually compatible.
Right.
Also extra money, probably. So.
Right. I mean, it makes sense. I'm just talking about what's required or not required.
All right.
It's obviously it's up to you all.
Oh, let's make a motion. Continue.
Katrina Horan, can we get the staff recommendations back up, please? So before I make a motion, is there any opinion, definitive opinion about the setback, or we just
doesn't matter. Just point forward it, and we'll either vote it up or vote it down.
But I thought we were continuing it. I'm confused. I thought you wanted to continue
Kirsten, I don't see a reason to have to continue it and it just go to staff review.
Well, we can make
that's
a motion.
My
and
opinion.
You, the
They're
going to
need a variance anyways.
Vote it down, and if you deny it, then that's what we can do at this point.
Katrina Hornung, I make a motion that the Historic Preservation Board Commission approve the petition of Homestead Architecture 24-004688 COA 225 West 40th Street with the staff recommendations 1, 2, and 3, as well as the as well as providing a context of the existing building and the existing ADU adjacent. Was that right? As well as the minimized footprint 24x24 for staff review for approval
as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Kirsten, and do the recommendation of approval. That's all.
And recommendation.
The recommendation of the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Oh. And recommend the approval of a variance for the ZBA with the revised footprint. Correct.
So we have a motion on the floor. Does anybody second that?
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Okay, so now we call for a vote. Katrina?
Katrina Hornung, approve.
I need further discussion.
Levina, no.
Virginia Mobley, no.
Ann Miller, no.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Netrika, approve.
So we have a tie. Good, look at that. It comes down to me. So, I mean, overall, I'm going to say that I'm in agreement that this is something that needs to be, there's a little bit of rework done. Overall, I think it's going to be approved, but it is incomplete. I don't see the elevation. And that's just one of those things that I feel that it needs to come back in front of this board to be reviewed. You know, I don't have an issue with the setback or anything like that. I think that is perfectly appropriate as far as the context of the neighborhood. And we all understand that garages, you know, cars in this country have just grown to an obscene size. So it's just, that's what we need. But we also need cars off the street because we are a growing city. But I am going to decline at this point because I think we need to continue it. So the motion does not pass. So now we need to come up with a motion that will work and either motion to continue this or table it with some conditions for the next meeting or come up with a different motion.
Kathy Ledvina, I make a motion to continue.
I can get the paper for you.
To a date certain. What's the petitioner? 30 days next month?
October 23rd is the next meeting date.
Are you okay with that? Or do you want to do November?
When is the next due date?
Is that okay? I'm not waiting for them. They're discussing.
This would be a returning application, so they would have a little more time to submit it. So they're not submitting a new application. The filing deadline is actually Thursday, I believe, of this week for next month's meeting. But this would be the same number. So they would have another week. So next Thursday.
Oh, okay. So they have plenty of time. Next Thursday.
Yeah. Plenty of time.
With that? Okay. So Kathy Levina, I make a motion to continue to the October 23rd meeting of the HPC. So I move that the HPC commission continue this petition of 225 West 40th Street, 24-004688-C0A, new construction, small part 1 and 2, variance-non-contributing demolition until October 23rd, because we need a completed application with the concerns mentioned.
Katrina Hornung, I second the motion. Katrina Hornung, I approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Nantrika, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have Petition of B Smart Home Solutions, 516 Siler Avenue, solar panel installation.
All right, thank you. This is Caitlin Chamberlain again. The applicant's requesting approval to install 9 solar panels on the roof of 516 Siler Avenue. This was built in 1930 and is a contributing resource. Staff went through the review process as we normally would for this. We had discussed with the applicant that because of how the ordinance is currently written, solar panels on contributing resources require a special exception. They were hesitant to apply for the special exception until they heard feedback that the board might be leaning more towards approval before doing the application. That being
folks,
said,
folks in the back, I can hear you over the top of the presentation. Okay, thank you.
The solar panels would be visible because they would be installed here. So staff recommends the applicant applies for a special exception, finding that the special exception criteria would likely be met. Since there's a modern asphalt shingle roof on the building, the panels would not damage or obscure any character-defining features, and we've seen this come several times before where it's, there's just no way to not have the solar panels showing from some of these historic houses. So staff found no issue with this, but because the special exception was not applied for at this time, the recommendation is to continue the request to install 9 solar panels on the roof of 516 Siler Avenue to allow the applicant time to apply for the special exception required for this project because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
All right. Anybody have any questions for staff?
Kirsten Connor. I'm only a little confused because we've approved projects in the past where solar panels are visible from the right-of-way, but they don't have to apply for a special exception.
From the lane.
I believe when it's, the way it's written, it says street and not public right-of-way, so it only means, like, the street elevation, whereas, like, if it was seen from the lane, it wouldn't apply, and they wouldn't need the exception. Other cases, they have applied for the special exception because of the street visibility.
Is there a way we can revise that in the future?
We are discussing that currently.
Okay. I find that to be.
And can you remind us right now? So the special exemption, who approves the special exemption?
You all would approve it.
Is there
they
an
haven't
added
applied for it, so we can't approve
correct
it today.
That was hence the continuation recommendation.
So if they'd applied for it today, we could approve everything and move forward.
Katrina Hornung, is there an added cost for that or?
Yes.
Okay. I understand.
I'm curious, how much is the added cost?
Yeah, it's $1,000 application fee.
Outrageous.
That's not out of our purview, though. That has nothing to
do with it. No, you're absolutely right, but it's still an outrageous burden for somebody who's trying to do something that's just going in line with the city's
legally,
vision of being a green city with a zero
legally
carbon
they have
footprint
to have a special exception.
Just because of how the ordinance is currently written, they do.
Our hands are tied.
Here's my question. If they were to move those panels to the back of the property, would they need that special exemption?
We actually discussed this with the applicant, and because of the way the light hits, they have to have it in the location that was selected.
Have to?
That's what, I mean, we can ask the applicant, but this was what we discussed.
Okay, does anybody have any further questions for staff?
Kirsten, just out of curiosity again, how fast can that be changed?
I guess we would have to have some discussions with the city as well, and it would become a text amendment, so it would take a little bit of time.
Okay. I would love to get that started.
Can we set up a grant? Does the city have a grant to apply for special exemptions in this, when it's eco-friendly and within line with the city mission? Okay. Is the petitioner available? Please step forward, state your name for the record. Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm well, good afternoon. I am Nicole Lee, owner of B Smart Home Solutions.
Okay, good afternoon. So as you can see, we're in a bit of a predicament because clearly we want to move forward with your application, or I think that's the consensus of the board, but
right.
We have a technicality that prevents us from doing so.
Right.
Now, Ms. Levina has a question about the impact as far as being able to place it somewhere else that it wouldn't be visible from the street, and is there a reason it is not able to, you're not able to do that?
So the way that the panels are currently designed, it is designed to be placed where there is the maximum amount of sunlight, because this home is getting solar plus battery. And so we need to make sure that when the panels are placed, they're receiving the maximum amount of power, which will reduce their power bill. That is the goal of this whole project in all, is to reduce the client's power bill as well as provide her with the extra usage so that she's able to charge her batteries.
Kathy Levine, I understand that, and our goal is to provide visual compatibility to protect the neighborhood. And so the question is, if you move those solar panels to the back, what would it take extra to move them to the back so they're not visible from the main right of way?
They would not produce the same amount of energy.
Could you add one more panel to make up for the energy that they might not be getting from the front to the back?
No.
Why?
Because of the way.
Would it take two panels? I mean, have you explored the possibility?
The shading at the back of the home.
At the back.
Yes. The shading would not allow the panels to produce the power needed to, one, make the home completely off grid between the hours of 10 and 4, as well as charge the batteries.
So why is the shading different from the back than the front?
Because there is tree coverage towards the back of the house.
What about the middle? I mean, how far can you move these panels back to produce what you need and comply with the standards? And this would help you as well as...
Yes, it would, which is what we went over before submitting permits and anything, just to make sure that we were producing the maximum amount of power for the client to reach their goals. And so when we do put our home inside of the application, inside of the sunlight tracking application, it shows us where the maximum amount of power will be produced for the home. And so it provides us with a shading analysis to let us know that if we put the panels over here, it will not produce for the client. And so with the client paying towards the leasing of this solar system, we're trying to make sure that they're getting the biggest bang for their buck when producing power, which helps them decrease their power bills.
Could we pull up the picture of the property just so we can get, because it's pretty evident in that picture, I think, what the issue is and why it needs to be where it is.
There's a lot of sunlight.
Yeah, no problem.
Because you're still at any point on this property, as you're looking at it from that street view, I can see the entire roof.
Yes.
From the street. So it's visual from the street because of the way the pitch is. And one way or the other, whether you're walking up the street or down the street, you're looking at the roof. You can see it from the right of way. So a special exemption is going to be required regardless of placement. So we're in that position. And is it going to be financially viable to do the $1,000?
We will have to get with the client and make the client notified of the additional costs.
So how far back can they be to provide the maximum? How far? I don't know what your studies are. I've never seen a study. I mean, it would be great education-wise for us to see this. I mean, how far back from that main facade can you put those panels?
Not too far back, because if you can see those trees in the back lining, at certain parts of the day, they'll create a shading on top of the panels, which is why we wouldn't push them too far back.
Kirsten Connor, I just wanted to say I wish we could change the special exception situation, but I really appreciate you trying to help the client like get the best bang for their buck. We obviously, all of us, really love solar panels.
Yes.
It's a great thing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Pam Miller, I just want to say the same thing. Thank you so much for your patience in this. Wish we could do it right this moment. But thank you for being the part of the process as the city starts to get a little bit smarter about how we can make these things move forward, because we're all for green energy. So
thank you
for being patient.
Okay, so we're clearly in a position where we need to continue this regard. as far as a special exemption. So in essence of everybody's time and consideration, I'd like a motion to continue this.
Katrina Hornung. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission continue the petition of Be Smart Home Solutions 24-004732-COA 516 Siler Avenue until the next meeting, October 23rd.
With the special exemption.
For special exemption, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards.
Kathy Levine, did any members of the public have anything to say?
Well, it's pointless because we've still got to come back and review this at a later date because we've got a special exemption. We can't make a decision. We can't move forward.
But we're asking for a staff recommendation, which means
it still has to come back for approval with a special exemption at the next meeting. We cannot make any further decisions today.
Katrina, did you finish that motion? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Kirsten Connor, second.
Okay.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy Levine, I approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Approve. Kirsten Connor, approve.
Okay, motion passes. Next on the agenda is petition of Hanson Architects, Patrick Phelps, COA 24004724, 2517 Bull Street and 2517 West 42nd Street, rehab alterations and special exception request.
Good afternoon, Jonathan Mellon. I'm sure you all know by now. Big fan of the Google Street View. So I'm sure you all are familiar with these properties. If you're driving up or down Bull Street. These are the existing conditions. And I remember some years back when I used to exercise more and ride my bike, being quite fascinated by this building because, as you can see, the north elevation, the side elevation, is visible. However, the primary elevation fronting on Bull Street was covered many years ago. And the side building, I always wondered what the history was of these two buildings. And so we're very excited about this project that's before you. So there are two addresses. There's 2517 Bull Street, which this is technically one building, even though I'm going to go through in a minute, that it's actually made up of different components. And then there's 2517 West 42nd Street, which is this modest one-story metal building located to the rear. That's also on DeSoto Avenue. So first of all, I think it's important to give credit to applicants that are really following the mission of what the Historic Preservation Commission is all about. These are all non-contributing buildings. And that's a topic for another day where we look at whether we need to, and we've been looking at, Kelly's been doing a great job at going through for the Victorian and streetcar districts, what's contributing and what's not contributing, and we will be coming back to you all with some thoughts on that. So the reason I'm going off on this tangent is that the applicant could be before you to tear all these buildings down and put up a new building or two new buildings. However, the applicant is not proposing that, but rather is proposing the restoration with some tweaks to what was there historically of these two buildings. And staff thinks that's just a wonderful approach and really, again, gets to the core mission of the Historic Preservation Commission. So what I'm going to do here, if you bear with me, just quickly pull this up. So the applicant included this photo. I cannot take credit for this. This is from the Georgia Historical Society. But as you can see, at the corner on Bull Street, was a frame, two-story frame building. And then there was the two-story masonry building directly to the north. This is the frame building that was there. It is still there. It's actually, you probably all remember when the buildings were starting to be restored on Broughton Street. And many of those unfortunate facades, in my view, that had been put up in the 1950s and 60s were removed. And fortunately, on a lot of the buildings on Broughton Street, the historic facades were actually still there underneath the material that had been added. And the project architect will walk you through this in a moment and articulate far better than I can. But as you can see here, as I noted a minute ago, the masonry building is still intact on the north elevation, and much of the original facade is still intact underneath this later change here. The frame building has seen many more alterations, as you might expect would have happened, and the project architect is going to walk you through that. The 2517 West 42nd Street has seen a number of alterations, not surprisingly, to its fenestration, but in terms of the overall massing materiality, it's pretty much the same as what was there historically. So I'm just going to walk you through what's being proposed here. Again, this is 2517 Bull Street. It's a little strange that they both have the same address, but that's a whole nother issue. So what the applicant is proposing to do is to remove, again, these are non-contributing buildings. But what we think is really wonderful about this project is they're treating them almost as if they're contributing buildings. There's a little bit more flexibility, obviously, with a non-contributing building. As I said, they could have come before you to knock them down. But basically the idea is to remove that unfortunate facade that was added in the 70s, from these two buildings on Bull Street, restore the masonry building here to the right, to the north, restore with some changes the frame building that wraps around the corner. And I'm just going to go through all this again. Again, these are the existing conditions. As you can see, the existing conditions are, I think we would all agree, not visually compatible with the contributing buildings in the area. This part of the Bull Street corridor has seen the loss of a number of buildings. There are a lot of non-contributing buildings along this stretch. But what's being proposed here is really reflecting the development of how this, what is still called 2517 Bull Street, it was actually done in different sections. So you have the frame section here at the corner. You have a garage section here, which I'll show you in a minute, that was added later. And then you have this building here, addition. It's, again, it's a little confusing because it's all the same address, to the north. And so the applicant is proposing to kind of reflect that, in their, excuse me. So if, so let me go through here and just, so 2517 Bull Street, which is the frame building and the masonry building. It was three sections, starting in 1916, and continuing until about circa 1930. The facade, that unfortunate facade, was added in sometime in the 1970s, which you see here. But this would have been the garage addition that was added. And then there were some additions. We don't know exactly when all the changes were made, but there have been a number of additions and changes made over the years, particularly for the frame portion. And so when staff was evaluating this, again, it's a non-contributing building, staff felt the proposed design intent that the applicant had come up with for 2517 Bull Street not only met the standards, but was very supportable from a preservation point of view. Just go back here a second. So there are a few things related to 20. I'm going to first talk about 2517 Bull Street. I hope that's okay. The applicant is requesting to two special exceptions for 2517 Bull Street. In terms of the exterior walls, they are requesting to be allowed to use hardy fiber cement panels on the rear portion of the building. Again, that's that garage portion at West 42nd Street and DeSoto Avenue. That is currently not a permitted material. They are also asking for a special exception related to the percentage of the window openings to allow for the percentage of the openings to be less than the required 70% on the ground floor facade due to the existing conditions. And I'm going to let the project architect walk you through both of those. We do have, I'm going to pass it around, we do have a sample board, and I will point out the hardy cement panels that they're proposing to use. So in a nutshell, that's what's being proposed for 2517 Bull. Again, this is, scroll down a little bit or scroll out. So this is the front elevation facing Bull Street. This is the restored masonry building that dates from around circa 1930. This is the original 1916 building that is being restored with some changes. There have been many changes to this. So the original form had been changed quite dramatically. Then this is the side elevation. Again, frame structure, there was a later garage addition. This is where they're proposing the material that they're requesting the special exception for. And then this would be at the rear on DeSoto. Again, activating that street, although this is more kind of an urban design point. What staff thought was really wonderful about this project was the idea, and I'll let the applicant articulate this more than I can. The idea is to activate this street, which is almost like a lane, and have uses that front on this, whereas presently it's not, I think we would all agree, not the most friendly environment for people to either walk down or gather on. So that's very commendable in terms of the design. So that's the gist for 2517 Bull Street. As I noted, the application also includes 2517 West 42nd Street. Now, this is the very modestly scaled one-story building here. It's made out of metal panels. Again, as I noted, the original form is largely intact. There have been some changes, not surprisingly, to some of the openings. You can see concrete block, things have been infilled. And so what the applicant is proposing to do is to basically restore the structure. Here's a rendering here, and the project architect will walk you through all of this in a moment. But basically, to again have it address the street again, DeSoto Avenue. This is an idea, an image, I should say, of their intent to, again, as I noted, activate the street, which to me is more like a lane. But this is, from an urban design perspective, really a wonderful solution. So I know I'm sure you have a lot of questions. And since we issued our staff report, the project architect and his team have been in touch with us. But I'll just go through this deliberatively. So the staff recommendation is approve the request for selective demolition and alterations to the non-contributing properties located at 2517 Bull Street and 2517 West 42nd Street with the following conditions because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. Provide a sample mock-up of the proposed hardy fiber cement panels that are proposed to be installed on the side rear portion of 2517 Bull Street in order to ensure that they are visually compatible. If found to not be, then substitute fiber cement siding, which is an appropriate material. And if you'll bear with me. So again, this was the frame portion. So architecturally, and even from a preservation point of view, even this is non-contributing, the notion that you would delineate or separate this later addition from the historic frame building made sense to us. So that's why we wanted to have you all weigh in on whether you thought the proposed material could be visually compatible on the rear portion of 2517. The applicant has provided additional information on the proposed mechanical equipment and refuse storage area for 2517 Bull Street. I'll let the project architect walk you through that in a moment. And then for 2517 West 42nd Street, this is one of those things where we've had some good discussions today about needed changes to the ordinance. This is a non-contributing building. It's metal panels, so they're replacing the metal panels. But the way the ordinance is written, you're not allowed to do that. From a preservation point of view, from an urban design point of view, it's the right thing to do. It's not allowed. So for 2517 West 42nd Street, either change the proposed exterior material of metal panels for the building to a permitted one or request a special exception for the material. They're basically trying to do, and I'll let the project architect explain it, almost like an in-kind replacement there. But it's not a permitted material, so we can't. You all can't just approve it like that. Also for 2517, same thing, provide additional information on the mechanical equipment and refuse storage facilities. That has been provided and the project architect is going to walk you through it. We're also recommending approval of the two special exceptions from the following standards. After looking at the material, it's staff opinion that the hardy fiber cement panels on the rear portion of the building would meet the special exception criteria. It's something that we will be bringing to you for further discussion, not necessarily this material, but there are a lot of new materials coming out that staff has been, you know, we get barraged every day by phone calls from people who have different types of materials in terms of for roofing, for different types of window materials. And so we're going to be coming to you all to have a broader discussion about, are there substitute materials that are more environmentally friendly, that last longer, that still work visually, and whether there should be some tweaks to the standards. Probably you all have heard for many years there's been a debate about slate roofs. There used to be faux slate, and when the faux slate first came out, not very good. Faux slate has come a long way. They're not, I wouldn't say Savannah is a city that has a ton of slate roofs, but that's just an example of a material. So we're recommending approval of the two special exceptions related to the proposed use of the hardy fiber cement panels, and as well, can get mouse to work, the requirement for the 70% opening on the ground floor facade due to the existing conditions. And again, that would be, and the architect can correct me, that would be on the side elevation. And I'm sorry, Bull Street elevation with the 1930s building. So again, I know I've thrown a lot at you guys, but overall, I would just close by again commending the applicant and the project team for looking at a site that contains three non-contributing buildings and not taking the easy route, which would have been to just scrape the site and build something new, but really trying to restore three buildings pretty close to where they were, two of them basically back to the way they looked historically, with the frame one with some changes.
Thank you, Jonathan. Does anybody have any questions for staff?
Kirsten Connor, I agree with you, Jonathan, about that adapter reuse. The greenest building is the one that's already there. Super awesome. I love it. I do have a question. They're proposing to paint the brick. I've noticed in the drawings. Did you all catch that, or is there a reason you're approving that?
Yeah, you're talking about for the 1930s portion.
Yeah.
I believe the architect can walk. My understanding, we did ask about that, was that their understanding, and the architect can walk you through this in more detail, is that because of what was applied or glued to it, that the brick itself has some damage to it. And so the idea was, I believe they're amenable to, once they peel off the facade, maybe not painting it, but they need to figure out, they've done some selective demolition, but they need to know how intact that brick is, if that makes sense.
It would depend on that, but also, I mean, there are sealants you can use that don't mess with the visual integrity of the brick. Also, the sides that are existing that do not have any material application on them, but the board can discuss that. I was just curious about that.
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Kathy Levine, my question is, I think you call it the garage addition, I'm not sure, but the window openings, do we need a special exemption not to require a header and sill?
Let me pull up the elevation.
When we consider whether or not the fiber cement panels are appropriate.
Sure. Let me get to the elevation drawings. Bear with me. Zoom in here. I'm sorry, Kathy, you're referring to these. In terms of the requirements for... Okay. Let's pull up. It's always a learning for all of us. So these are the requirements for windows. New construction, alterations to non-contributing resources, and additions.
This is where appropriate.
The trim paper shell.
I'm not sure there's a requirement. Yeah. 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 I don't believe there's a requirement. And I don't want to speak for the project architect. I think the idea was to kind of differentiate the design of this portion.
I understand that.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. They're not required. If you, right. The way I would read it is it's not required. If you do them, then there are certain applicable requirements.
The caveat being is where appropriate. Does anybody else have any questions for staff? Hearing none, would the petitioner please step forward and state their name for the record?
Just scroll down. Okay, and the Google Earth is here. So, this is, I'll close up. And then if I need a detail of the dumpster enclosure, we can run that separately.
Yeah, I would just say that.
I'll talk about it.
Okay. Here, you just scroll down.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and Commission. I'm Patrick Phelps with Hanson Architects and the applicant, and I'm representing Benchmark Real Estate Group, who is the developer of the project. And I can take some of the credit for the approach to the project, but I really have to give it to Benchmark for seeing that this is a valuable property on a corner. And with the evidence of the building that we were able to provide to take a restrained approach on not demolishing, but redeveloping these properties and bringing them back to some type of an active corner. I'll kind of walk through and unpeel. It's more like an outback onion because there's been so many things that have happened to this building over the years. Of course, on the I lost it already, John. PowerPoint. Okay. I'll start with this historic photograph, which is very informative. And I do want to appreciate staff working with us prior to the submission, allowing us to do selective demolition on the site in certain areas so that we could learn a little bit more about the project. And I hope that in the future with projects like this, that the board is allowable and staff is amenable to that, because it's been very formative to the architecture team, the developer, to get an idea of what they can work with before they're presenting it to you and make sure that what we're telling you we can commit to, which we're certainly willing to do so. So we can go through the Sanborn maps, but I think I can run through this photograph if everybody can see that okay on their screen. The house residence was the first building on the property that we were able to determine, built in the early 1900s. And then in the probably early to mid 30s, you can see the little car down there. Bart's Bakery was expanded. So we think that this was a family business that was run out of the house. They expanded into the masonry building, built a two-story masonry veneer or masonry structural exterior envelope, and it's a heavy timber interior. At that same time, the second floor of the residence was raised because there's new steel structure that supports that second floor, and the storefront was added. With our selective demolition, we have determined that you can see the tile base. Portions of that, we have evidence that the tile was there. And so in our proposal, the package that you have, we're showing a wood base there, but we would like to go back to a tile base. And we've talked to Historic Savannah Foundation. They've given us the recommendation as well. And I think that that's the appropriate move. I'll go through that when we're looking at the elevations later. And then you can see the structure in the back. I can't tell this one's lower than what is the current structure, but there was a concrete block building that was built first, and then there was an addition added to that. So at a later point in time, which we don't have a date of. So that would be this section. With that concrete block addition, I believe that this section of the wall was infilled and this brick was extended from the original building. So there's concrete block underneath here. And with our selective demolition, we've determined that there's wood frame here. And we also uncovered wood siding here, which we're planning on replacing. The window openings we're keeping in similar locations. Some of them are using the exact location, but we're shifting some so that they correspond with the ground floor openings here, which you can see some ghosting of areas that were infilled with doors or that were garage door accesses. On the corner, at some point in time, I think somebody got tired of painting the building and they decided to slip cover it for maintenance reasons in the 50s. And it was also a prominent trend in the 50s and 60s to close up retail spaces as the advent of the malls conditioned the space, make it an interior environment. And I think that's what happened to this building. It just got a slip cover over the years. So underneath this aluminum siding is bare framing. And as well on this side too, is we haven't found any siding material underneath it. So this addition was put up probably in the 50s, second floor, and it was put aluminum siding. The section of the house that is this area here with selective demolition, we have found the original siding is probably, I'm going to guess, 75 to 80% intact. And the intent is to restore that, replace as needed. And we are lucky enough to have determined that we do have the original window openings on the second floor and the first floor that we can restore. And in some cases, we actually have window frames and sashes that we're going to restore on that level. However, you can see right at this line what we had in the photograph from the 30s. Used to be a porch. Unfortunately, all of that framing has been removed, and subsequent new framing, new sheathing, and then the stucco has been placed on top of that. But luckily, above it, the cornice line is intact. So what you're looking at here, there's some nice dental detailing, and wood cornice is still intact. So we're going to try to preserve that as well. Let me shift down to the elevations. So on the... Here we are. So let's go, sorry. So on Bull Street, this faces east on Bull Street. We do have the existing masonry building. So the proposal is to remove that stucco cover that's on there. You can see that there were original openings that were enlarged probably in the 30s, and that material is gone. So our plan is to keep the existing opening and not restore it, because that would change a, cause a change in the brick material. So you can see the new storefront here and here, and new window and an existing opening here. And then this entry is existing, where we'll put in a new door. And this was actually the original entry to the building with a stair that went up to the second floor. All of the windows shown are the existing openings. We have evidence of that. They've been CMU or filled in with CMU. And with the selective demolition that we've done, we found that this window is still intact in front of that CMU. So if they're in good shape, we would like to restore them, or if they're all in place, we still have to demolish just to find out. If not, the plan is to replace all of these with a simulated steel frame window, but it would be made of aluminum, so it'll have a lower profile than a standard aluminum storefront, at least on this facade. Yes, we are planning on stripping off all of the stone stucco. It was applied with Portland cement plaster stucco on it. In the areas that we found, it is pulling off, and some of it has peeled off. But the idea with painting it is not so much for the protection of the brick, but we're afraid that when we pull the stucco off, that it's going to actually peel sections of the brick off. So a fix would be to make it blend aesthetically, would be to paint it. If we find that the stucco comes off more easily and we're able to clean the brick and it's a nice aesthetic look, then we're certainly open to keeping it exposed. So if that's something that we need to work through the process with staff by providing samples, mock-ups, I know for new masonry or masonry restoration, we have to do a mock-up. We can certainly do that here. But the intent would be to only paint the front facade. The side facade that faces north, which is exposed brick, would remain exposed brick. We would not paint that. The 1916 building, we'd remove the storefront that was originally probably built in the 1930s. It's been replaced since, probably in the 50s or 60s. It's more of a traditional or a contemporary aluminum storefront. Remove all of that. And then the area that we're talking about providing the tile base would be just at the sill beneath the window. So there's a brick base that's been tiled. We would restore that back to the tile surround. And then the original doorway, we would replace the location of it, which would be in the center, which is not there anymore as well. As we turn the corner, again, we're still uncovering, but we're finding each of these original window locations. So we know the sizes, and then, you know, as we're uncovering, we're also finding some of those, most of them are still intact, at least on the second floor. And then the ones on the first floor, we're finding openings. I haven't found a window yet that's been intact. So where there is one that we can save, we'll certainly save it. Where it's new, it'll be new, but replaced to match existing conditions.
And then through the photographic evidence, we found that the shutters, so we're replacing those. On the addition part, so this one was a little tricky because, you know, per Secretary of Interior standards with an addition, you do want it to differentiate from the historic structure, which we definitely have a historic structure. So options in the ordinance allow it to be vertical or horizontal siding, which may be cementitious siding, hardy siding. It could be stucco. However, we run into an issue with the definition of stucco only being applicable if it's on a masonry frame, which the second floor is wood frame. So the ordinance would not allow stucco on that second floor, which is wood frame. So we're proposing the panelized material, which would still be cementitious. It's a hardy product, similar to hardy siding, which is approvable. And give it, we think it would just give it a little bit more of a modern feel, cleaner. We could do the approach that we go through and do stucco, but I don't think that that would be the clean look that we want. And the panels that we're proposing have a metal edge trim with them, so it'll certainly be a newer addition visibly to what the historic building is, much more so than I think stucco or the horizontal siding. So I think the material is approvable, but the application or the dimensions of the material are not by the ordinance right now. And so that's why we're asking for the special exception on that. I believe the other one is the commercial storefront percentages, which requires up to, I believe, 70% of a commercial space to be storefront, which I'm going to say as a practitioner of commercial storefronts, that's extremely high. Should be looked at the ordinance. But since we're reusing the existing openings, that's why we're asking for that variance, because we don't want to have to increase that to meet the 70% requirement. And I think that was actually pulled from the National Landmark District, where you're dealing with more Broughton Street type buildings and less so in a neighborhood transitional downtown area, which would be probably smaller storefronts and windows. So those are the two exceptions that we're looking at. And yes, every special exception costs $1,000, not just for solar panels. So I think an easy, if you're going to look at the ordinance, would be to reduce that cost amount to make it easier for these special exceptions, because we're finding a lot of them would have to apply through the ordinance.
Is that per exemption or is that per application?
I'm sorry? It's pretty vague. It says special exception checkbox $1,000.
So if you put it all on one application, you get under.
We filed for this since we have two applications, yeah. One for each property. It's $2,000.
It is something that we're looking at, and we don't actually get the money. So
that's that.
But I could see where an applicant would be hesitant upon asking for something.
Well, like a scale of your project, it's one thing. It's a huge project. It's a drop in the bucket compared to the scale of the overall job. Whereas the previous applicant, it was significant and prohibitable, which is, you know, it's a sliding scale in this as well.
It is. And it's still a level of commitment. I mean, so.
Right. Excellent. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Do any of our board members have any
I have one more building to talk about.
I'm sorry.
And I'll try to make it quick. So the metal building, which is here, really we are taking the existing openings, which were a large garage sliding door. There's another garage door here and another one here where we're swapping the opening out with new aluminum storefront. We have the locations of the windows in the back, so we're replacing those. So the special exception on this one would be to replace the existing metal siding with new metal siding. And that is really because it's in bad shape. And for us to meet new energy codes and get the wall type correct, we need to do so. So that's the special exception request there. We have provided documentation on there's a dumpster enclosure wall that is on the west side of the property. So it's going to be a brick veneer painted and high enough to enclose the dumpster. And there is a wood fenced area around the compressor units for the metal building. All the compressors on the Bull Street building are on the roof. I think that has answered any questions. Any questions that you may have to me?
Kirsten Connor. I just want to say this is a wonderful project. I love it. I do have a couple questions for the tile, which I'm super happy. I was going to comment on that you're bringing that back. That's awesome. Will it wrap around the side as in the historic photo does?
Yeah. So what we have is maybe the existing photo. Right now it's everywhere that this base stucco is where the tile has been found. So it would wrap around the corner.
Awesome.
All underneath the new storefront.
Awesome. I love that. And then I think you mentioned it earlier, you will be keeping the dentals.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't see it in the plans. So I just wanted to.
Those were, we didn't know what was there until we got some of the selective demolition. So we're finding a little bit more. And of course, any historic fabric that we can keep or replace in kind, we will do so.
Awesome. And then my last question, the metal structure, the window you're putting on that white window.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason that was chosen versus like a metal to go along with the rest of the material?
We don't have any historic reference for the windows, but if you look at the window frames themselves, they've been removed. But if you, let me get here, hopefully this will show. The only thing that I can see is there's a few. So you can see a wood sill here.
Yeah.
And
okay.
A wood header with a wood drip above it. So I believe that those were wood windows and not metal frame.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And the side, yes. Elevation. This south facing elevation with wood, and then just the front of the east elevation is going to be the metal.
Correct. And I say wood, but it's going to be a metal clad wood window, but it'll look like a wood.
That makes total sense.
Okay.
And then
this was an opening. We do have the original opening here that's been modified that we're restoring.
Okay. And then my only other thought. Future down the line, this area has a lot of murals. That would be kind of cool if you do end up having to paint the brick.
The idea is out there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Hi, Virginia Mobley. I just want to commend you on preserving what's underneath. I know that these are not rated buildings, but over the years, having been born into that neighborhood, we have hoped that they could be preserved in some manner, shape, or form, and I think you're doing a good service to the original structures because the brick building is an example of modernization. It was moving a family-owned, basically operating out of a small kitchen into a modernized production that did mass production of bread and baked goods for the city. So it does have significant history and significant value to the neighborhood. The only thing I would like to correct you on is you made reference to the windows in the commercial structures were more in keeping with Broughton Street. If you were way back when along Bull Street, Bull Street was a very viable commercial street. So some of its scale may not be in keeping with the neighborhood business, but when their origin was at their heyday, they were very much in scale.
Noted. I would say that I still think the 70% finished ratio is high. I think that's probably more around a 50 to 40% fenestration of glass versus wall area.
Well, Mrs. Bart, who I was friends with, as far as I know, all of her family photos are in the Savannah City archives.
Great, thank you.
So there are some very good pictures.
Good, thank you.
And she would be, now I won't say turning over in her grave, but I will say she would be yaying from her grave that these buildings are going to be virtually restored.
Good to hear. Thank you for your comments.
Kathy Labina, quick question, I guess, for staff as well as Fisher. Did we not amend the ordinance to allow stucco over wood? And in that, go ahead.
Yes, we presented that to the City Council 2 weeks ago. Yes, and they unanimously approved it, so that has been changed.
So to the petitioner, knowing that has been changed, that you can now stucco over wood, would you consider, or your clients consider, actually using stucco, a material that is, you know, within the ordinance versus the fiber concrete panels?
Fiber cement panels.
Fiber cement panels that are outside the ordinance.
Certainly, if the board determines that we would do that, I mean, that is a viable option now. It wasn't a viable option at the time we made the application. Understood. But I do think that the fiber cement panel would be a nicer look.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Is there any members of the public that would like to make a comment? Please step forward and state your name.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC is excited to see these rehabilitations occur. We're very thankful, as the same as you guys have all expressed, to the architect and the developer who are willing to basically restore these buildings that are considered non-contributing. We agree with all of staff's recommendations in our entirety. And as Patrick already mentioned, we wanted to request the small change of adding the tile to the storefront because it was shown historically. And we've already discussed that. So that's all I have.
Do you have any other members of the public that would like to make comment? Or anybody online?
No, sir.
Okay, so at this point we can enter board discussion. We have two rounds.
Katrina Hornung, I also just want to echo the excitement for this type of project. I am not inclined to use the hardy fiber cement panels, especially now that we know that we can use the stucco over wood, but I'm open to that discussion.
Kathy Labina, just for the record, I like solar panels. They're good. The location has to be appropriate. Okay, moving on. I agree with staff. I think the replacing the metal panel with metal panel is appropriate. I would like to see the petitioner consider stucco as an alternative to the fiber cement panels. They can save $1,000 by doing that if the cost is prohibitive. The fiber cement panels do concern me because the facade, it's not a part of the ordinance, and I think that there are a lot of other alternatives for such a long stretch of the facade. I think it's about 50 feet. I don't know exact measurements, but it's about 50 feet of the panels on a main thoroughfare.
Virginia Mobley, no comment.
Pam Miller, 25 years ago when I was riding down that road, I wouldn't have thought about buying anything there. Now I can't afford to live in that area because of all the renovation. I really love it. I love the project. I really will go along with staff recommendations on this. So thank you.
Kirsten Connor, I have no problem with the fiber cement panels. We already allow fiber cement siding. Also, I think it actually is
visually compatible to the area. It's a very, like, it's got a lot of variety of design choices in that neighborhood. And because that is a, it's concrete block, correct? Yeah. I see no problem with it, and I think it's visually compatible. And I am super happy about the tile going back. I agree with HSF and staff recommendations.
Jeff Notriga, as an adjacent property owner, I could not be more ecstatic about this project and look forward to its fruition.
Katrina Hornung, no further comment.
Nora.
Virginia Mobley, no comment.
Pam Miller, no additional comment.
Kirsten Connor, no additional comment.
Jeff Notriga, no additional comment.
All right, this is Darren Bailey. I want to concur as far regarding the siding. I think that Hardy board is more than compatible in that neighborhood as well. Everything else, it's a thrilling project. Couldn't be happier. So at this point forward, if there are no further questions, no other comments, we need to entertain a motion. You pass me the paper so Kirsten can make a... Actually, no, it's you. It's your turn. Come on. Pass it along. I'm passing the gavel to her after this motion anyway.
Kirsten Connor, I make a motion to approve 517 Bull Street and 2517.
Sorry, it should be 2517 for both.
Oh, sorry.
It's a typo in the PowerPoint. Yeah.
I motion to approve 2517 West 42nd Street, 24004474 COA, with staff recommendations. I totally didn't read this. I'm sorry. Scratch that. I'm going to try again. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of, there's no applicant name. I'm sorry. What is he?
Oh,
Hansen Architect. I'm sorry, guys.
Hansen Architects PC, Patrick Phelps.
Hansen Architects PC, Patrick Phelps, 24004724 COA at 2517 West 42nd Street with the following conditions.
There are two addresses.
2517 Bull Street and 2517 West 42nd Street with the following conditions recommended by staff: to approve the request for selective demolition and alterations to the non-contributing properties located at 2517 Bull Street and 2517 West 42nd Street with the following conditions because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. 1, 2, 3, and 4, and approval of the two special exceptions from the following standards: exterior walls, new construction, alterations to non-contributing resources and additions, to allow for the use of Hardy fiber cement panels on the rear portion of the building at West 42nd Street and DeSoto Avenue because the special exception criteria is met pending the review of a sample and mock-up, and windows, new construction, alterations to non-contributing resources and additions to allow for the percentage of openings to be less than the required 70% on the ground floor facade due to the existing conditions because the special exception criteria is met, because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criterion standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Jeff Notriga, second.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy Libana, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Notriga, approve.
Thank you.
Motion passes. Now, at this point, I am going to pass the gavel to Ms. Cathy, as I have another appointment I have to attend. I've got the script right here.
Kirsten Connor, I have to recuse myself for the next item on the agenda, number 13.
Do we have quorum still?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, moving to the petition of Ethos Preservation, Kim Campbell, 24-004702-COA, 315 West 40th Street, Rehabilitation and Alterations.
So the opportunity is to request an approval for some rehabilitation work as well as alterations to this building. Rehabilitation work includes repair, replacement, selective siding, as well as repair, replacement of the foundation. Overall, staff did find the rehab work to meet the standards. Applicant is also proposing to install a rear deck onto the home that also meets the standards. The main point of discussion is the alteration of three windows on this property. One of these windows is this one here on the rear. That's going to be converted into a door for the deck. Two other windows will be shortened, and these are these two on the sides. Staff does find these alterations to be compatible with the standards. That is not typical. It's mainly due to the location of these windows. They are minimally visible and on the rear, so that's why we're suggesting approval of them. Other than that, staff, again, does fund this entire project to meet the standards. With that, staff recommends approval of the project with the additions, with the conditions shown on the screen. Does the board have any questions? The applicant is here. Can you come and speak?
Good afternoon, Kim Campbell, Ethos Preservation. I don't have anything further to add. We're happy to let staff know on condition one. At this time, we don't anticipate there's going to be extensive replacement of anything. We think it's going to be repair. As to condition two, the height of that front porch railing is 2 feet 11 inches existing and 4 inches on center. That is shown on the, if you look at the front elevation closely, unfortunately, we didn't have a licensed architect on this, so some of the dimensions are yellow, but if you zoom in, they are there if you check it out. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you'll have them.
Does the board have any questions for the applicant? Hearing none, are there any members of the public who would like to speak? No. Okay. Would the... well, at this time, we will now enter into board discussion. No further comments will be... accepted.
Looks appropriate to me. I'm good with staff recommendations.
Pam Miller, I'm good with staff recommendations, and thank you for your patience. It's been a long meeting.
Kathy Levine, I concur.
I agree.
No comment. Katrina Horning.
Is there a motion? Is any further discussion necessary? Is there a motion?
This is Pam Miller. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of
Ethos Preservation, Kim Campbell, 24-004702 COA, 315 West 40th Street, with the following conditions, because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criterion standards as set forth the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance. Approve the rehabilitation work and alterations at the home located at 315 West 40th Street with the following conditions because the work meets the standards. Number one, notify staff if extensive repair or replacement is needed on the foundation, front porch, or siding. Number two, confirm the height of the handrails on the front porch and confirm that the balustrades are no more than 4 inches on center.
Katrina Horning, I second the motion.
Is there any discussion on the motion? No. Okay, for the vote, Jeff?
Jeff Nantrika, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Sorry. Motion carries. Thank you.
Should we grab Kristen?
Right. We're ready to continue. I'm sorry, you had a question?
Should we grab Kristen?
Oh, yeah, we need to bring everybody back.
Thank you.
Ready to move on to petition number 14, petition of J. Elder Studio, Jerome Elder, 24-004736-COA 203 East 39th Street, after the fact rehabilitation and alterations.
So again, the applicant is requesting some after the fact alterations as well as approval for some corrective work on this project. So the corrective work includes replacing fiber cement siding with wood siding, vinyl windows with custom board windows, and correcting three windows that were altered. Staff finds that this corrective work meets the standards. There was also a rear addition that was constructed on the home without a COA. The applicant does request to remove the roof of this addition. With or without the roof, staff does find that it meets design standards. The only thing of note is that the element does not meet base zoning. It's too close to the side setback. The applicant is willing to inset it so it meets those standards. And staff does recommend reaching out to development services about the rear setback just to make sure that's okay. And also, again, there were multiple windows that were altered in this case without a COA. Three of them were towards the front. So how about this window, and the window over here, this window. Those will be put back as they were historically. Staff finds that fine. There were three other windows that were altered that the applicant would like to retain as is. On the side elevation, two single windows were converted into sort of paired windows. And then one window on the lower elevation of this side was also completely removed and enclosed. Typically, staff does not recommend approval of window alterations, but in this case, these elements are minimally visible from the public right of way. So staff, in this case, finds that they do meet the standards. With that, staff recommends approval of the rear addition, the corrective work, or 203 East 39th Street with the following conditions, because the work is otherwise visually compatible. One is confirm that the rear deck steps meet the setbacks, and two is lower the height of the deck handrail to meet the standards. Board, have any questions?
Any questions for staff?
The applicants are here.
Perfect. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Jerome Aldo at J. Aldo Studio. My team and I, we are thankful for working with staff on this. We were brought onto this project because, of course, the person did after the fact work. And from our research, what we were able to find is what was presented. One additional portion was some of the windows that were removed are in a location that the development services would not allow for them to be added back. It's within 1 foot of the property line, and therefore they said they will not allow for it based on building code when we have a correspondence as such. So that's all I have right now, and thank you for your time.
Do you have any questions for the petitioner? Can you, I'm just curious, can you repeat that? They won't let you add back windows even though they were?
Can't if it's work where you have to add back windows, and we face this on multiple projects, including ones that were for revolving fund properties. If they cannot meet the building code today and they were removed, you can't get it added back.
But they were removed by your clients?
Prior to me getting involved, yes. They were already, it's after the fact work. So this is all completed and right. Now they're trying to undo. And the building official said, no, we cannot add it back. And they quoted all the codes. We've faced this multiple times. But you also can't see it because it's all the way to the back and the neighboring building is 17 inches away from that window. You can't exactly see it. Can I zoom? Oops, I moved it, but yes.
What's the address?
2 The window is between that very narrow portion back here.
This is, I guess, a question for Jonathan as well. I mean, I understand if they were enclosed, 10, 20 years ago, but if they were enclosed a year ago, I mean, they still wouldn't allow them to be added back?
So we'll follow up with the city on this. I wasn't aware of those discussions, but there obviously are some code issues.
They don't allow it.
I understand the code, but yeah. Well, my question is, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, we'll follow up. That's something I've dealt with.
Yeah, strange. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, correct. Okay, any other questions for the petitioner? All right. Is there any members of the public who would like to address this project? Okay. Hearing none, the board will now enter into discussion at this time. No further comments will be accepted.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Jenny Mobley, no comment.
Kathy Labana, no comment.
Ann Miller, I have no comment.
Kirsten Connor, I guess I should have asked this earlier. No comment besides, I just wanted to make sure the walkout window was left on the second story porch, just to make sure. Okay, thank you. I was just wanting to make sure because I love it. Okay, no comment. Thank you.
Jeff Natrika, no comment.
Do we need further discussion? Hearing none, is there a motion?
This is Pam Miller. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of J. Elder Studio, Jerome Elder, 24-004736-COA, 203 East 39th Street, with the following conditions. Number one, confirm that the rear deck steps meet the setbacks. Number two, lower the height of the deck handrail to meet the standards because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Katrina Horner, I second.
Virginia Mobley approved.
She seconded. So wait, give me a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? No. Hearing none.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Natrika, approve.
Motion Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Continuing on to the approved staff reviews. A list of staff reviews is attached to the agenda. Are there any questions to the staff regarding the approved staff reviews? Hearing none, is there a motion to acknowledge the approved staff reviews?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to approve the staff reviews. Pam Miller, second.
Any discussion?
Hearing none. Katrina?
Katrina Horning, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Jeff Nutrika, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There are none, so we'll continue to other business. All right.
So I know we talked about this, these two items during our pre-meeting, but just so we get it on the record, we'd like to thank our colleagues here at MPC and Development Services. We had a discussion about the definition of a story. I know a lot of information was thrown at you guys. We can provide all the information that was shown to you. We can email that to you, all of you. There's a lot of moving parts there with the definition. But also just for the public record, the application for the proposed Forsyth office building project, the plan is that it will first go to the Metropolitan Planning Commission before it comes to you. Again, there is no requirement that it goes to you first or them first. It's really up to the applicant. The applicant has decided, we believe, to go to the MPC. It has not been scheduled. The MPC, because of site plan review, as I understand it, can grant variances. The applicant, as we went through earlier, is requesting a number of variances related to the footprint, setback, and probably most notably the proposed height, which would be double or more than double what is allowed in that area. So there's more to come on that. You will be, when it comes to you, I can assure you, there will be a full-scale model, not a full-scale model, a model, a model that provides, we made clear to the applicant, the model needs to also have the context surrounding it. It can't just be a model of the building. It has to show the blocks around it and Forsyth Park. We also made clear to the applicant that any buildings that they're using to make an argument for visual compatibility need to be located within the Victorian Historic District, not other cities, towns, et cetera.
Kathy Levine, I've got a question about that. If the MPC approves a height and the HPC may not find any, whatever they do, visually compatible, what happens then?
You trump them. So you trump that. So they, for them to get their demolition, for the applicant to get their demolition permit for the three buildings that are on the site, they have to get a COA from you all. So if you rule that the height, whatever is agreed upon at the MPC, is not visually compatible, they can't move forward with the project.
So they can't say, we've got permission to go 3,000 feet high, therefore you have to give us 3,000 feet.
You can still, it has to be visually compatible.
Okay.
Exactly. I don't want to speak for the applicant, but I think the idea was what they did not want to have happen is they came to you all first and you guys said, I'm just throwing a number out. You said, okay, we think 60 feet is fine. And we're going to work on all the design and they got everything. And then they went to the MPC and the MPC said, absolutely not. It only allows 40 feet. You can only go to 40 feet. And then they'd kind of be back. They'd have to come all the way back to you. There are flaws in the whole process. Obviously they could end up, but the applicant at this point is indicating that's how they want to do it. They're legally, they can choose to do it that way. So,
and to continue that discussion, Kathy Lugana, you know, it used to be that you had to have two meetings, one for height and mass and the second for essentially the details. Can we require them to split that up?
We have talked with them about it. They did submit for part one and part two, but since they're not coming to you now, Depending on what happens at the MPC, I believe they will probably do the part one with you all and then do a part two to follow. They were on a very tight schedule, I believe, but I think there's been some flexibility. I don't know all the details, but they can, we checked, they can submit a part one and part two at the same time if they want. Often people do not want to do that because you have somebody who's looking at a development site and they don't want to spend the money to have their architect do all the details. They want to come to you first. Hey, how big a building can we build? In this case, because they were under time pressure, they wanted to do both at the same time. That wasn't our recommendation. But it's something that we can discuss, you know.
I just thought the large scale ones had to be split up. The small ones are, you know, you could, are manageable.
Right.
But the large scale or a monumentum buildings had to be split up. It wasn't.
We did express
how we used to do that.
It's not a requirement.
Not a requirement.
It makes sense. And we did convey that doing it initially, the idea was it was going to be part one and then a part two. They submitted it as both.
Yeah,
that's their, you know, but you all very much so when they come to you can say, we are going to approve the part one, but we want you to come back for the part two because we have questions. So that you can, in essence, split it yourself.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if we don't like the part one, we could say continue it and continue the part two.
I just thought there was a requirement that they had to be split up.
A good point. It's very unusual. We were not anticipating that it would be one application when it was finally submitted, but there are a lot of moving parts with this project, as I'm sure you've heard.
Quick question about that, Katrina Hornung. Do we have any say on the underground structure, considering it is not visible from
the ground? You do not. Okay. So, our staff report, just to give you a preview, will not have anything related to an underground parking garage or whether we think that, you know, it makes sense to have, you know, that big a garage access off Howard Street. That's not within our purview at all. That will be handled, though, and we will let you know when it's been scheduled to go before the MPC if you all want to attend the meeting or watch it so you can see what their concerns are. But they will get into questions of, you know, traffic studies and all that kind of stuff.
Kirsten Connor. Oh, sorry, Jonathan. Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
This is also a little off topic, kind of, not really, but is there any progress on some kind of like archaeological ordinance in Savannah?
You mean like one further than what we have now?
Do we have one?
Yes.
Oh.
We do have one. Caitlin is the archaeology expert if she wants to.
I was totally unaware.
But that's a good point. Because city funds are going to be used, are they required to do the archaeological study?
I'd have to be honest to get back to you on all that, but it's a great question. Yeah, it would be more of a city requirement depending on where funding was. Depending on also where the funding is coming from for the project, which I'm not privy to.
Do we know that?
We can talk to our new city
HP
officer.
I know, that's what I'm looking. She's putting her head down.
she's going to be coming up. She said she wanted to talk to you, so.
But maybe we should wait until after the meeting.
But it's a good question.
Okay,
but anyway.
Sorry to bring up that whole thing. Thank you.
Moving parts with this project. But we will definitely give you, you will be given a lot of heads up on when we anticipate it coming to you.
But Jonathan, it's not on for next month or the next 2 months, is it? Are you aware of?
It's unclear, and it still has to go to the MPC. Until we know exactly when it's going to the MPC, and depending on what happens at the MPC, I don't know. I mean, you know, the applicant can say we don't want to be heard and request it be continued. I think once they get a clearer picture from the MPC about what the broader community thinks is appropriate or not, they'll have a closer, better idea about what they can present to you in terms of their design.
Yeah, definitely. Please let us know. I think that's going to be interesting to watch and hear what they're saying.
Yes, exactly.
Before it's our turn.
Yes, I think there'll be a lot of community input. So with that, I will, if it's all right with you, turn it over to our partner at the City of Savannah, who I believe wanted to talk.
Hi, it's Jessica Baldwin, City of Savannah. I was going to say some stuff, but Bree informed me that because they're not properly notified that I shouldn't, so I'm not. It's nothing serious. But I will, we are actively looking into the archaeological ordinance, and we'll keep you posted as those things move forward. Thanks.
I'll let Caitlin come up and...
I have pulled this up. It says for applicability, the following ground disturbance activities undertaken by the city on public property shall comply with an archaeological assessment as outlined under the following conditions. The construction projects have a building footprint of 1,500 square feet or more, or surplus public property sold by the city. So I don't... No, it doesn't apply to private property. So I think it's just anything. It would have to be by the city. It would have to be like city property from the way it's written right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
More to come on that.
Adjournment. The next Historic Preservation Commission meeting will be held on October 23rd, 2 p.m. in the Arthur Mendonza Room, 110 East State Street, with the pre-meeting at 1:30. Is there a motion to adjourn?
This is Pam Miller. Make a motion to adjourn.
Kirsten Connor, second.
All in favor.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.